May your broadband speed never waver. May your laptop stand the pace. May the mighty bytes of cyberspace never lose their digi-pace. But of all the things we wish for thee, the truest of them all is to share the fun and reap the joy of the midweek drive through all.
I saw two birds I never knew, but then I wanted to. Oh, how I wanted to. I saw two birds sitting in a tree. Looked good to me, so good to me. And I will fly to you and hope my dreams come true. And I will fly to you and hope my dreams come true. I saw two birds, not a thing to do. How I wanted to, and I wanted you. I saw two birds singing on a line. Wouldn't that be fine? Way to spend our time. And I will fly to you. With a song to sing, with love to bring. Well, I love to sing. Gonna be that bird, be there for you if you want me to. And now you want me to. And I will fly to
in September when we first featured the awesome talent of Ben Dolby, and we just heard two birds there because it's frankly a wonderful tune, and rightly so. There's another thing that's even now beginning to emerge from the magical world of BD, that is, of course, is Ben Dolby, and we'll hear about that now over the next few moments at least, because we are delighted to welcome singer-songwriter, general all-round quirky individual, it's Ben Dolby. How are you, sir?
Very well, thanks, Alex. Thank you for having me.
Well, always good to feature your good self. And again, looking through our dates and our diaries, we see it was the 24th of September when you were featured on the programme discussing your life and times with Tessa Snart and myself, addressing the whole lines of things there. I don't know. It seems like only yesterday as opposed to nigh on 7 months ago or even longer.
That is pretty scary, isn't it?
Just shows how time can actually pass by in all so many ways. It might not even be real. See what I did there? It's working there. However, we do have Rebecca Bond with us as well. Rebecca, this might well be the first time you've encountered the magic of Ben. Is that true?
It is indeed, and I'm very glad that I have.
So, a new song is in the offing, a new tune. It's all about You're Not Real. I've heard it, listened to the whole thing. That's just, Rebecca, what did you make of it? I mean, you've hopefully had a quick listen to it as yet. Any thoughts?
I haven't had a quick listen. I actually listened to it a couple of times and it made it to the playlist. And funnily enough, I've made a summer playlist now. So all of the best summer tracks are going into that one. So you've made it to the top playlist in my Spotify. So there we go. I'm very, very impressed.
Thank you. I'm glad you like it.
I absolutely loved it. I think the lyrics are great. I love the style. I think it's very sort of easygoing music. It's easy to listen to. And as I said, I've listened to it several times already. So big fan. Yeah, I love it.
Cool.
Spreading the word, Ben, as you can tell, spreading the word. Anyway, Rebecca, over to you. What questions would you like to put to Ben about life, the universe, rural activities, or indeed just the wonderful world of Dolby?
I'd love to talk about the music first, as I really enjoyed it. So you clearly have a talent for music, I'd say. And where did this start? Did you always love music? Did you discover the talent? How did that work for you? Is it something you've enjoyed from a young age?
I was stood on the stairs in the queue for a music lesson, and I heard two of my friends talking about starting a band, and I just thought, I have to be involved in this. And I didn't play an instrument, and that one of them said, oh, I'll play drums, and the other one said, oh, I think I'll play bass. I said, oh, can I be involved? So I started taking guitar lessons so I could be in a band.
Amazing.
Yeah, so
do you have a preference of like vocals or playing guitar, or is it a case of you love everything?
I used to just play guitar, and I was very quite shy about singing and not very confident in my voice, but I've had loads and loads of lessons, and I actually enjoy singing. I like singing as well now, so I can actually bear to hear my own voice, which takes years and years and years to get to that point. But I'm enjoying singing as well
now. Oh, wow. Oh,
guitar's my first love.
Oh, okay. And did that open up this kind of musical love, or was that there already? Was it from that moment that your friends wanted to start this band? Was that the moment you'd say that you had a love for it, or had you always enjoyed a certain type of music but had never considered producing any?
I don't really. The thing I remember is I grew up on a farm, so I remember my dad putting me in a tractor and saying, "Right, drive around this field to roll the grass." And of course, in a tractor, you can sing at the top of your voice, and no one can hear you. So I remember just singing at the top of my voice, making up songs in a tractor when I was, in single digit years. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of my earliest memory of making music.
Was that indeed where Farmer's Son actually had its origins? Was that the sort of moment where we were sort of reflecting on that whole side of things, from your rural activities on the back of a tractor?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, Farmer's Son is definitely about my dad and growing up on the farm. Yeah, that's what that song was about. Yeah, and also just, ending up in London and just thinking, oh, it's all that life has just gone, and this is just wall-to-wall concrete, so it's kind of...
It's difficult to kind of feel the Hampshire sort of line if you're in the midst of Piccadilly, but I suppose in the pandemic sort of era, it could well have happened. You don't know.
I know.
Quirky and thought-provoking and eclectic artist. I mean, as Steve Lamacq said, a man out of time. There isn't much music like this troubling the airwaves at the moment. I mean, that's really part and parcel of the fact, I think, it just works so well because it kind of almost hits the zeitgeist, the spirit of the time, the third decade of the 21st century, and here we are, quirkiness to the fore. What is reality?
Wow, that's a big question.
You don't get that on Radio 2, I can tell you. They don't throw the line like, what is reality?
Oh, yes. Well, it changes, doesn't it? I mean, I think the older you get, the more you realise how weird life is and how weird the world is. And it's, I have less of an answer the older I get, I would say.
Yeah, that's very true. It's just it's surreal, surreal. So many sort of ways, really. However, let's talk through the whole notion of are you real? Is it a rhetorical question? Is it a question that effectively you're sort of just saying to warn somebody about a relationship? Is it a case of being authentic, that word that much beloved by Californian therapists across the base? Be your authentic self. How does it relate?
Well, it's a song about unrequited love, obviously. And you can take the question in two ways. So one is like, are you real, with lots of swear words sort of deleted out of it, so it's like really quite angry. And then the other way is like, I never really, because I was a young man, not very in touch with my feelings, I didn't really know how to talk to romantic interests. And I never really found out what was going on in the other person's head, you know. So in a way, it's like, were they playing with me? Did they really not know that I had this feeling for them? You know, I actually don't know, you know. So it's kind of like there's two different ways of taking it, I would say.
The classic line of the manipulated versus the manipulatee. We just don't know where we're going still.
Maybe just yes. Need to maybe it was all perfectly innocent. I'll never know.
Yeah. You see, that's what comes of contemplating life on the back of a tractor as a child. But never mind. It's just
yes,
a thought.
Yes. It doesn't train you for some. It doesn't train you for certain situations.
Yeah. Totally about it. Okay, Rebecca. Anything you'd like to add to this interesting discussion and debate about reality and so on?
I mean, I might not try and answer that question, but I'd love to know, Ben, do you have any influences or any inspiration? Is there any particular thing or particular person or band that kind of influences your music or your songwriting process?
I love Pink Floyd. That's kind of soaked into me. And I like Johnny Cash, Prince, like I kind of like music with energy and a bit of spirit to it, a bit of life to it. Mm-hmm. So it's something that's attacks not right to work. I quite like hard rock as well sometimes. So it's something that's got a bit of bite to it, and it doesn't have to be aggressive. It's just something that makes you sort of sit up a little bit and go, oh, that's got some life. Yeah. In it, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And I think your music is very you, which is brilliant. But do you find that you kind of incorporate some of those influences into your work? Do you tend to use like the same songwriting kind of themes or anything like that? Do you deliberately take things from these artists, or do they find their way in somehow?
I would say when I started out, not at all. And it's just like I'm in my own world, basically. So I'm not really conscious of taking from other artists. As I've got more experienced, sometimes I'll think, oh, I want a sort of choppy guitar like Talking Heads in this bit or something like that. Yeah, so I start to, and it's helpful when you're talking to producers to sort of say, oh, well, I want this kind of sound in reference to other artists. But that's very much after the fact. When I'm writing stuff, it just kind of arrives in my head, you know. I'm not really thinking, oh, I want
to write something about X. Yeah, it's very you as well. I mean, it's great to have influence, but I think it's great that you have that distinct style. I think your voice is very distinct, and I would recognise it. And I think you have a good way of your songwriting process as well. And it's interesting that you talked about the couple of meanings that you think you could get from it. Because for me, I kind of, although I took the romantic side of it from it, but I also kind of took this kind of questioning of like a human experience. You know, it's asking this other person, are you this? Are you that? It's almost like, are you feeling these same things I am? Which again has that romantic aspect to it. Mm. But also I think just the wider human experience, I think that's what I took from it as well. So I love that you've sort of put that really relatable issue into your songs. I think it's really good.
I'm just particularly impressed, Ben, with the fact that anybody who can use the line excellent pigeon fancier romance with fantasy interludes when actually sort of doing a review on Amazon has got to actually have a sort of quirkiness to the whole thing. I mean, that could be what the Are You Real subtext is all about. It's pigeon fancying. That's the whole thing.
Where do you dig that out? Is that on my website? I can't
remember. We always like to do our research on these kind of things. And if you juxtapose that production with Zoom, it just opens up a whole new world.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, that's Robin Hobb. I mean, I read a lot. So that's Robin Hobb, that is. And she read these great books about dragons. And she has these funny little interludes with two pigeon keepers talking to each other. So I thought it would be quite fun just to comment on that little sub story rather than talking about the dragon, which everyone else reviewed.
And frankly, if the production team behind Robin Hobb have any sense whatsoever, they'll hire you immediately to do the soundtrack for the motion picture. You know, it has to happen, quite clearly.
Oh, are they doing a movie?
Well, they might be now. We're putting it out there, Ben. You know, that's the important thing.
Oh, wow, that would be cool. No, her books are pretty cool. So it's
the power of the midweek drive. You know, the influence is there. That's the important thing. So from that, the fantasy world, and obviously you're an Andy Weir fan, you've commented online some of that. Does that also feed into place? I mean, you mentioned Dark Side of the Moon, of course, the Pink Floyd system. It was only a matter of days ago Rebecca was actually reviewing the first episode of Space 1999, which, of course, has the moon blown out of the Earth's orbit. So does fantasy and SF play a part in terms of your writing and influences?
Yes. Yeah. I think it's tricky because I think I tend to read like other people, like people watch TV, so I read to relax. So oftentimes I'm reading something that's not necessarily very demanding, but sometimes if I read something and it really moves me and inspires me, then I don't necessarily write a song straight away, but it'll give me some, it'll give me a feeling and an energy, which I then use later on. So, so Two Birds came from reading some books about, so it's called Urban Fantasy. So it's like a sort of werewolf, you know.
Happens all the time. You can be wandering
romance,
through,
you know, exactly, yeah.
Streets of London. You've got Ben Aranovich actually there, Rivers of Love. It's just a nightmare, really. And it's, are you a lycanthrope? Are you a kind of half-gelfling? You know, it's very confusing, really.
It is, yeah, yeah, yes. But yeah, so that's, so it's, you never know what's going to, you never know what's going to, what's going to inspire you. But yeah, Andy Weir, I mean, The Martian was fantastic. I really enjoyed that.
Well, I think The Martian set a whole new sort of theme in terms of obviously Martian exploration. And of course, we're up there now with Perseverance. I say we for the human race, obviously, doing its whole setup from that point of view. Who knows? Rebecca might be around when there's the first woman on Mars, basically. In fact, it might well be Rebecca Bond who actually has the first trek to head off to Mars. We don't know. Anyway, Rebecca, anything else you'd like to put to Ben?
I'd love to. With your songwriting process, I've mentioned how much I love the lyrics. Do you tend to sit down and write a song and build a song from that, or do you tend to focus on the instruments first and then write around the music you've created? How does that process work for you?
So for me, it's the 1% inspiration, 99% perspiration thing. So I will get a melody and words kind of at the same time, and then I just, it's usually melody and words, but I don't get the whole song. So I'll get like the chorus, and I'll get maybe a snippet of a verse. Mm-hmm. So I have to write it down and record it on a phone or something. And then like the real hard work is like, okay, well, I've got a verse and like half a chorus, and I have to pad the thing out and make a proper song out of it. So that bit's just hard work, you know.
But you find it comes quite naturally then? Does it just, inspiration hits, you know,
yeah,
whenever?
Yeah, yeah. And
that's probably a good way for it to happen though, isn't it? You know, kind of springs out of nowhere and you can work from what?
Well, it's lovely, but it's when it doesn't happen, of course you're a bit stuffed, aren't you? So
oh, that's true. I didn't think of it that way. That's true. But I think that's quite a nice way, because I do think inspiration, you know, strikes, you know, when you're least expecting it. I think it's all, you know, it's all around. It would happen at any time, whether that's writing, music, anything along those lines. I mean, even life in general, I think it's all around us. But especially with songwriting, I can imagine that's quite fun to just have that burst of, you know, oh, I've got an idea, and sit down and just produce something from that. I think that's really, really cool.
Yeah, and you just, I think the discipline part of it is just thinking, right, you have to think, right, I might not remember this, so I have to get it down now, you know. So that's the thing you have to do. You have to sort of try and get it down. Although I think was it the Beatles said that, I think it was either John Lennon or Paul McCartney said, if you can't remember it, it's not worth recording. So that was a, but you know, that's another level really, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true.
Pink Floyd, Kate Bush and Prince, all part of the influences. That's one heck of a sort of mashup of late 20th century creativity from that point of view. If we were to push you, which one would you go for? Would it be the artist formerly known as? Would it be obviously Syd Barrett's band? Or would it be La Bush?
Well, I think nowadays, probably be Kate Bush, I think. Although when I was younger, it would have been Pink Floyd, because I've kind of cheered up as I've got older. So when you really want to feel down and wallow in feeling bad,
what is it
Pink
with
Floyd
that tractor in Hampshire that Pink actually Floyd leads to sort of, you know, low key scenarios? I would have thought we'd be in the countryside, you'd have a bright smiling face all the time, Ben.
Yeah. I don't remember it that way, but no, Kate, I mean, Kate Bush is just so, it's just like the raw genius, and it's so, Kate Bush is very inspiring.
The red shoes, the man with the child in his eyes, and of course, running up that hill, just three of the sort of aspects you can actually relate to. Tempted to do any cover versions? I mean, because obviously we talk a lot, and some musicians actually love cover versions, and you put your own spin on it and your own take. Others actually say, no, I'm doing my own original stuff. So what are your thoughts on that?
Occasionally, yeah. So I did a version of Que Sera Sera about the credit crunch about 10 years ago. I kind of surfed the wave of anti-credit crunch songs with that one. And then I did a version of I'll Find My Way Home recently, but it's like, that's the John Evangelist song, but it's like, I think the tricky thing is like having your own instrumentation and having your own spin on it. So that's the bit I don't get too often. So occasionally I think, oh, I could really kill this song, you know, somebody else's song. I don't sort of get that inspiration too often. But I've done covers when I've been in bands, and it's fun. And I suppose the nice thing about doing covers in a band is, like, you just get this canned audience reaction from all the love that the audience have for the track. So you sort of, it makes your life a lot easier in a certain way, you know.
And do you prefer, from a collaborative point of view, working with other people, or is it a case of, no, I have to work alone?
I know, definitely the former. I love working with other people, and in fact, I've been working all day actually in the studio with my producer, and it's just great having someone else to bounce ideas off. Actually, I'm definitely a collaborator.
I don't know. You work all day in the studio, then you have media interviews to actually do on the evening. It's just it's never ending sort of hamster wheel, as we were saying earlier. It's astounding. But the exciting thing is, of course, that it's only a matter of days now, literally a week after St. George's Day, when, of course, Are You Real is actually released, presumably across all platforms.
Absolutely, yes. Yes.
Which is wonderful, because that's what we're going to be wrapping up with in a few moments. But before we do that, and you may recall, we do have two sort of closing questions that we tend to put to folk, as I say, from the interview back in September, etc. And Rebecca is going to throw them at you. And they are tough ones, Ben, so, you know, just be prepared. That's all I'll say.
Brace yourself.
Off you go, Rebecca.
Ben, have you had an enjoyable Zoomer with us this evening?
It's been lovely, thank you. Thank you very much for having me. Yes.
And it's been lovely to have you. Can we welcome you back again anytime soon?
You certainly can, yes.
And Ben, would you like to actually introduce yourself with the latest quizzical question from a rhetorical point of view, which even Socrates would have found quite deep and meaningful in his own way? Are You Real? Over to you, Ben.
Okay, everybody, thank you for listening. This track is called Are You Real by Ben Dolby.
Well, I know you like the Doors, and you wear the right clothes. You dress pseudo-gypsy poor with your carefully mangled hair, and you know the right bars where you only smoke Marlboro. Drink red with the boys who float in off the road. And I just have to ask, will Miss Perfect ever last? Are you real? Are you real? Are you Are you real? Well, does your makeup ever flake? And does your smile ever break? And do you bleed when you're cut? And do you cover it up? And does he treat you right? Or does he take you light? Do you ever complain? And do you ever wanna scream? So I just have to ask, thinking of a day in the past, are you real? Are you real? Are you real? It's a cruel little world to have to face on your own. And if you had to wear a mask, well, I don't blame you. And if you had to be cool, well, maybe I would have too. But I never could act, and I don't really care either way. just have to ask. When you take off the pretty mask, are you real? Are you real? Are you real? Are you real?
From the Department of Eye-Watering Statistics and indeed astonishing losses that occur, £15.7 billion. £15.7 billion is the amount that apparently British folk will be expecting to lose in terms of online fraud, with 66% of UK adults admitting to posting their passwords on social media. No, don't do it. Now, it may seem blindingly obvious, but clearly the fact that people are still doing these things and indeed not even changing their password when they're actually informed that they need to change their password means that we need to look at this in slightly more detail, perhaps forensic detail, you might well say. We're delighted, therefore, to be able to welcome today to the programme the Chief Executive Officer and indeed co-founder of ClearScore, that's a wonderful, Justin Bassini. How are you, Justin?
Very well, thanks, Alex. Nice to be with you.
Okay, Justin, so you know, to actually access this little Zoom thing, I had to actually type in my contact details, password given. We worked through that. We don't want to be Zoom bombed, of course. That was a fear from that point of view. You kind of get used to multi-factor authentication. I've had to do MFAs about 5 times today to access my university work, to access my other material, etc. It is a chore. It is tiresome. But surely when it comes to financial details as well, these are kind of essential aspects and safeguards we need to have really with as much regularity as brushing our teeth on the morning.
That's exactly right. You know, it is a bit of a hassle, but the thing is, we're all used to putting up with hassle every day in our physical lives, right? So we carry around a set of keys, most of us, and when we leave the house, we lock the door. And these are behaviors that over the years we've all adopted and we just take as a given, something that we should do to protect ourselves and our goods and our property. Now, in the online world, because it's so new, especially through COVID, whilst we've been using online so much, we need to start to develop the right habits around online security so that they become second nature, like locking your front door, like carrying your keys with you.
There are folk who will be saying, oh, well, yes, that's all very well for Justin to actually give us that advice, etc. But he's never actually been the victim of a cyber attack. But I believe you have.
Yeah, about 10 years ago, I was a victim of identity theft. So I had a credit card and a mobile phone taken out in my name. And it really taught me that whilst you're not liable for the losses, because if it's fraudulent, you know, you're not liable, but it's the hassle, Alex. You know, it took me many months to get it properly sorted. And you have to go through the whole process of going to the bank with your passport and utility bill and re-authenticating yourself and all of that sort of thing. And so since that period, you know, I've really taken more care over my online security, not putting information, a lot of information on social media, using complex passwords. And luckily, I haven't been a victim since then.
Of course, 10 years ago, one would arguably say that the cyber criminals were a lot less sophisticated and in fact, you know, would be attacking all sorts of things. Clearly, as the technology has improved, presumably the nefarious villains have actually got sophisticated as well.
Yeah, the big change has been the rise of information available on all of us on this thing called the dark web. And so the dark web is the bit of the internet that criminals use that people like you and I can't really access. And what's traded there is billions and billions of pieces of information about all of us. Now, where does this information come from? It's harvested from the internet, it's harvested from social media, and it's harvested through data breaches. And so unfortunately, all of that information is out there. And what you can use through services, I launched a service called ClearScore Protect, where every ClearScore user for free can get a scan of a secure version of the dark web and see what information is out there about them. And for the 2.6 million people that have used that on ClearScore, on average, they see 4 pieces of information about them. That can be a password, a date of birth, their email address. And so by being more aware of it, you can take action and it can motivate you to actually take your online security to the next level.
In terms of, as I say, the findings of the survey itself, I mean, over half of the folk polled said that they used easy-to-guess passwords, easy-to-guess personal information. One in 10 included their own name, 9% their children's name, 12% their birthday, and or indeed their pet's name as well. Now, these are all things which, as you said, presumably can be gathered together from the social media channels.
That's right, yeah. So if you are using those sort of passwords, there are a couple of tricks that you can use to make those sort of passwords more secure. The best practice is to use a password manager. That comes, you get free ones with browsers like Safari and Chrome, so you don't have to pay for that. That's the best practice. But let's say you don't want to do that and you are using your cat's name. So for example, my cat is called Huxley. And so if I use that as a password, it's pretty insecure because maybe I've posted a picture of Huxley on Instagram and people can know that that's his name. But what I can do is I could start to say, my cat, used as a password, the phrase, my cat is Huxley and he is Ginger, exclamation mark. Now, suddenly that becomes a much more secure password than just using his name. So there are little tips and tricks that people can use to really make a significant difference to the type of passwords they're using. And if they don't want to use a password manager, you doing something like that will really help you.
Yeah, I've got to ask the question, is it named after Aldous or Thomas, or was it just a case of Huxley sounding nice?
Yeah, probably Aldous.
Ah, yeah. Brave new world indeed for cats. Moving on. In terms of if people are listening to this and they think they might have been a victim themselves or know somebody who has been a victim of identity fraud, what steps would you suggest they should take?
Well, the first thing is to a very good way of staying on top of identity fraud is to monitor your credit report. Credit reports are really quite important now. And if most fraudsters are looking to try and take out credit cards or debit cards or bank accounts, and your credit report and looking at your credit report can be a way of staying on top of that. There are lots of free services. One of those is ClearScore. So you can sign up for ClearScore. If you have been a victim, then you need to contact all of your providers. Make sure that you are that the criminals haven't started to interfere with your bank accounts. You should change all your passwords. You should spend some time like really thinking about your online security. You can do a dark web scan to make sure that you can understand the information that is out there. And remember, you know, most of the time you aren't liable for any of the losses, but it's the hassle. And it's the hassle and time and stress and feeling really like under attack, as I did when I was a victim, that is the real impact here. And so that, you know, protecting yourself, taking some sensible steps is a good thing to do.
And where, Justin, would you suggest people should actually go to find out further information about what we've been chatting about today?
So if you want to sign up for ClearScore, it's free. That's clearscore.com, or you can download our app on the app stores. There's also Get Safe Online. It has a lot of resources as well.
Fantastic. Justin Bassini, Chief Executive Officer and indeed co-founder of ClearScore. Be well and be cyber safe.
Thank you, Alex.
Well, moving on from cyber theft and the dark web to another equally unsavory topic, but sadly one which does seem to be becoming more and more prevalent, and that's the whole preponderance of stalkerware. Yes, I'll say that again, stalkerware with respect to the web and so on. And to talk about this and some of the challenges that have been faced, not just during lockdown, but indeed on a regular basis, sadly, by a number of folk, we're very pleased to welcome the Director of Operations at Refuge. That's what Jane Keeper. How are you, Jane?
Good morning.
Jane, just talk to us initially about what stalkerware actually is and why it's such a pernicious element of the cyber world.
So stalkerware is unethical software that enables someone to track somebody else's devices, to get access to their devices so that they can monitor their location, they can potentially eavesdrop on their calls, their texts, their emails, their apps, and so obviously it's an absolutely, you know, very dangerous in the hands of an abuser of domestic abuse, and Refuge has found that this is in the majority of cases we're working with some kind of abuse of technology, these days is taking place, along with that physical and sexual violence and all the other kinds of abuse that perpetrators do.
And in terms of actually identifying whether or not you've got stalkerware or you're suffering from it, etc., just talk us through the kind of major signs of things that might kind of flag up on your tablet or your laptop, yeah, or things that kind of indicate that there might well be a problem here.
Yeah, great question. So what we say at Refuge to Victims is, if you're feeling uneasy, you're noticing that your ex-partner or abuser just seems to have knowledge about where you've been in the last week. It's often, of course, when victims have separated, so they think they're safe. Who you've been talking to, conversations you've had, and you suddenly realise there's no legitimate way that he could possibly know those things. And then perhaps you might be noticing a sudden drain on your battery, on your device. We say, trust your instincts, and, you know, look at, do you have unexplained calls on your bill? And very worryingly, could your abuser have actually had direct physical access to your device, which gives a real opportunity? And if that is the case, then do consider it and do start to get the information, you know, as per avast.com site and the National DA Helpline.org site, about to start to think what might be going on and seek some specialist domestic abuse support.
Of course, back in the 20th century, this would probably be referred to as gaslighting. And of course, stalking in general has been a very offensive and very regrettable aspect of the whole system. Are there any indications in terms of this? Is this mostly male on female? Is it a case of female on male? Or is it a case of, it's irrelevant of gender, really? When people have actually got this bizarre obsession, they will follow through with it.
Well, Refuge supports male and female victims. But as per, you know, all of the other aspects of domestic abuse, the physical violence, the economic abuse, the sexual violence and so on, it is overwhelmingly perpetrated by males on females. But whoever you are, you have a right to be safe and to privacy, and you deserve support. During the pandemic, Refuge has seen huge increase in 61% increase of calls and contacts to people reaching out for help to our helpline. And Avast's research also showed a 93% increase in these stalkerware apps. So we've had this perfect storm during the pandemic of everyone being told to be safe at home, when actually that wasn't the case for an awful lot of victims of domestic abuse around the country.
In terms of, say, dealing with this particular problem, I mean, there are a couple of relatively straightforward things that I think people can actually do, including just rebooting your phone system, presumably.
Antivirus that you can put on your phone. But it's vital. There isn't just, it's vital that any technical solutions are combined with specialist domestic abuse help, because abusers may escalate their violence. We want to make sure that we preserve what might be evidence, because many of these behaviours we're talking about are actually crimes, they're offences. And what we want at the end of the day is safety and privacy of the victim. And sometimes there's a need to be tactical in the way we go about that. These are very dangerous situations that, in the case of domestic abuse, you know, that can even lead to homicide. So yes, there's a number of things that we can do. In the first place, always try and prevent and secure your phone against anybody getting physical access to it. But you know, there is antivirus stuff that can be used as well. Refuge has a tech abuse safety tool on the helpline, the National Domestic Abuse Helpline website, with pink buttons that we produced with victims of domestic abuse on how to ensure your privacy and security with your devices. That is a useful place. It's really about get informed, get information, and get help. You have a right to help. You have a right to be safe and a right to privacy, and to reach out and help. Don't suffer in silence.
Do you think there's light at the end of the tunnel, Jane? I mean, it does seem to be very concerning that, you know, here we are supposedly heading towards a much more caring, sharing society, a society which is obviously having to deal with all sorts of challenges. Do you get a sense working within Refuge that, you know, these things are as bad as they ever were, or is the message getting through that actually any form of abuse is just wrong?
Well, people often ask us that, isn't it a terrible job? And I think it's a I love my job because every day I see victims of abuse and control get free, start new lives, and as far as technology goes, getting back their privacy and their security, and engaging with tech. We all have a right to be online. We live a lot of our lives online these days. And victims of domestic abuse have that same right. So I think the fact that we're talking about it today, domestic abuse is hidden, and so is stalkerware. But the great thing is that we're talking about it, so more potential victims will become aware of this possible issue, and be that much safer and able to protect themselves.
Yeah. Avast.com, presumably one of the websites to go to, as indeed is stopstalkerware.org. Presumably those are both sites you'd suggest people can actually head to if they want to find out further information about what we've been chatting about today.
And the National Domestic Abuse Helpline, nationaldahelpline.org.uk for victims of domestic abuse. Yeah, thank you.
Indeed. Jane Keeper, Director of Operations at Refuge, many thanks indeed. And be well, Jane.
Thank you for having me.
You know, one of the great things about the joys of Zoom that we've been applying to the Midweek Drive for Siren Radio and indeed Southside Broadcasting has been the fact that we've been able to actually connect with other legends of the past. I mean, clearly we had Amy Rush that was chatting with us yesterday, Armin Shimmerman, Quark, of course, in Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and Principal Snyder from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And now, of course, creme de la creme from Horncastle, the all-time wonderful soul who basically knows how to play a trumpet like no other woman I've ever met. It's the fabulous Sue Frith Grau. How are you, Sue?
I'm very well, thank you, Alex. How are you?
Very good, and delighted to see you in base and in position. We've passed the year, of course, since the pandemic broke and so on. You have obviously left Lincoln a good few years ago. You've got a whole new career in terms of educational advice within Horncastle and other sort of systems from that. But just share with us your experiences over the last 365 odd days of fun time we've been having.
Oh, during the pandemic. It's been, somewhat quieter than it would normally have been, of course, but that's been actually quite lovely. If we remember back to, ages ago last year when the pandemic first struck us down, I was very busy in the garden. It was beautiful weather. And did lots and lots in the garden, so that was very nice. And so all year I had a great load of vegetables to go at, which was better than it normally is, because normally I'm running here, there, and everywhere, and running about in the car. But all that time that I was spent running about, actually, I spent in better pursuits of growing vegetables in the garden. So from that perspective, it was brilliant. I had loads of tomatoes. Alex, had I known, I would have made you some tomato sauce. If I'd have known I was going to be in contact with you so soon after the pandemic, I would have made you vats and vats of it, in fact. I've also got a grandson now.
Congratulations. Yeah, I mean, I will say this, obviously, Sue, because you can't be possibly chronologically gifted enough to actually have a grandson. I refuse to believe this. You will always be in your mid-30s to me, and that's the bottom line.
Yes, that's right. Well, actually, I have to, a little sneaky secret though, with a grandchild, you actually don't have to do any of the work, especially in lockdown, because I couldn't go over and see the child. I couldn't babysit. I couldn't help out with the nighttime feedings or anything like that. So I'm well
slept. It's a win-win situation in many ways, Sue. A win-win situation.
Win-win. And I see lots of him on Skype. And I am getting to see him a bit more now, now that we're relaxing a bit, a little bit.
Yeah. So, I mean, clearly, as technology has developed, I mean, one of the things that certainly in common with the rest of my colleagues at the University of Lincoln, we had to switch to the delightful world of blended learning. And indeed, actually, this particular term has been the majority of blended learning, online lectures. Online lectures will be continuing in the next term as well. Certainly, we've been geared up as we set up, for the benefit of the listener, this is a thing called MDFs, or module development forms or discussion forms that we need to do for timetabling. It's very confusing, but still, what the heck. So no change there, you might well say, so in terms of the sort of format, and you'd be right. But clearly, we're looking at how that is being put into place. Do you think this is the future of education? Because the wins for me have been that actually attendances for my online lectures at this particular time of the year have actually been better than actually if we'd been in person, where people possibly didn't turn up. And of course, the fact that all of our online lectures are recorded as well means that they can obviously access the data and the information at different sort of times. So once you kind of got used to things like getting a reasonable signal and make sure that you've got a reasonable sort of device to actually work through. Clearly, my machine office actually at the University of Lincoln had neither camera nor indeed microphone. So on that basis, it would have been a case of an awful lot of busy typing from that point of view. So we had to work around that. But allowing for that, do you think this is the future of something which will reduce our carbon footprints and enable us to actually, you know, connect more widely? Or is that just a case of, no, we're going to follow our potato in a blonde wig prime minister and effectively sort of lead through the solar system and just go back to everything as was?
Well, I'm not entirely certain, because I do know quite a few students who have actually been quite struggling through this. Well, although they've been, as you say, logging in and following, they have struggled from the actual sucking up the knowledge sort of perspective, probably missing out on that spot where you could drop in to see your tutor and have a cosy little chat in a shared office.
They can still come and see me. It's just a case of it's going to be socially distanced, and of course it's via Zoom. So that's all.
Yeah. I don't know. I can see that it could. Well, I definitely think it will be a facet. I definitely think it might be the largest facet of learning from here on out. But from a perspective that I have from outside university, from a big organisation to actually run equipment and put everything right, it's a bit more difficult, a bit more disparate if your audience is the general public, because they don't always have exactly the same tools. They don't always have exactly the same skills in terms of learning, especially at this point. I mean, this has sort of been dropped in upon us. And a lot of the people that are within my sphere of adult education are an older section of the population and haven't had the experience on technical things to be able to, I mean, to be fair, a lot of them can do Zoom now. It's been a steep learning process, but we have also lost people along the way. So I imagine that, yes, it's going to become a large component of it, but I don't think it will ever manage to be the blanket cover for education. Mm. However, I also don't see a return to a blanket cover of in-face education either. So I think from here on out, I imagine we're always going to be blended. We were starting to blend anyway, weren't we? Because we had those platforms where we had modules that you could read the lectures online, and we were starting to do that blended thing anyway. So it's probably not as big a leap in some sectors, like for example, a university sector. It's probably not that big a leap actually. But I do think, but from a different perspective, it's going to change university education, because I can't see students wanting to keep paying for their accommodation and things like that, the external costs of a university course, if they can do it all online. So I think from that perspective, it might well change drastically.
yeah, we live in changing times, and I think that certainly the infrastructure is just about able to cope at present. Certainly 10 years ago, the pandemic had actually broken then. If we'd had to adopt a similar policy, we would not have been able to actually deliver the processes because simply put, the platforms were not robust enough to actually cope with that. And you want something which is basically simple, straightforward. I could go on about Microsoft Teams, but I won't because I get very frustrated with respect to Microsoft Teams. I think it's very fiddly. I will use it. I will engage via Microsoft Teams. But once again, I tend to prefer Zoom. But that's, again, a preference point of view. So any regrets about stepping away from Lincoln? Back in the day, of course, you were one of our fine key folk. You were there as an undergraduate. You graduated with first-class honours, as we knew you would. Came one of our key teaching colleagues in terms of the what was then, of course, the subject of media, culture, and communications, and became sort of contemporary culture and communications for a while. You were a sort of twin spearhead in many ways with Alison Moore in terms of the sort of dynamism that was there. When you reflect on your period of time, and I'm speaking to somebody here who's approaching his sort of 29th year at the university. What are your thoughts been in terms of the sort of memories of Lincoln?
Well, obviously, with the team that we worked with, I have excellent memories of working in Lincoln. We had it was a lovely time from that respect, wasn't it? From the respect of the teamwork. Unfortunately, I really did not like the commute. It's an awful. That is the worst thing about it. The worst thing was trying to get parked. And people not really understanding that where I come from, I have to come in by car. I can't actually. It's not feasible. It wasn't at the time, especially with two children to pack up and get to school as well. It just wasn't feasible. So that is the worst thing ever. And I do think that that's one of the things that we might take away from the pandemic. A lot more people will change. They will realise how many years of their life they're going to spend in cars if they continue in the way that they were working. So from that respect, I definitely don't regret it. I also don't really have any regrets as far as the work was concerned.
Je ne regrette rien, as Edith Pierre
calls that. Je ne regrette rien, Edith. Thank you. No, I don't. I don't regret it at all. I don't see that I. From what I gather of how the university has evolved, or my little sphere evolved in the university, I don't regret not being in it anymore. Although I do miss the people. There are lots of people, and I do often think about you guys. It's amazing that this is the first time we've actually spoken since I left, which is really bizarre. But
I thought it was something like... I said, Sue. Honestly, I thought we used to be sort of neighbouring office sort of partners. We had sort of offices right next door to each other. I thought, and then she's gone. I thought, well, what the hey, you know, just carry on.
No, it was definitely nothing you said. It was just like, I don't know. But doesn't this feel like it's normal? It's like it, never not spoken over the like thousands of years since I've been gone.
Exactly. The comfortable shoes continue to work on that premise. So let's sort of ask another question. Any advice that you'd like to give to any prospective students who, I mean, we're in the whole recruitment cycle now. I gather that if you've actually accepted a Lincoln, you get a joyous hoodie to actually hug, which is nice. Which is always, I don't think you're going to actually get a human being in terms of that. I don't think it's a David Cameron hug a hoodie.
Right.
You never know with our marketing stuff. What advice would you actually give to somebody who's thinking about, shall I not take that step into higher education, given that we might be having a bit of blended learning for a wee while? Is it worthwhile? What would you say?
I think that is a question that is getting more difficult, I would say. Because in the past, I would always have said to people, especially people like myself from a very small place in the country, you've got to get out. You've got to get out. Even if you come back like I did and have.
From California.
From California and all sorts of places around the world. But you've got to get out. You've got to see things and you've got to do things. And it doesn't really matter how you do that, but you do have to do that. I think everybody has to do that in life. It's like you have to like tick that box, make sure that you've had experience other than your primary experience of just growing up. However, I'm not sure that if you're at home and doing your university degree, I'm not sure how much it depends what degree it is, depends what you want to do with it and how, where you want to go with your work prospects or what you want to do later. I think there is more of a question to ask yourself, why am I actually going to university? Whereas before I would have said, go anyway, because it's going to be really good for you. Not just good fun, but really good for you. You meet new people. I presume you do still meet, I don't know quite how you're running your things, but I presume you do meet people sort of online.
We have actually introduced a number of midweek drivettes solely through the basis of having taught them on class and basically then being able to sort of cross over and work on that premise. So yeah, we're getting a whole new area of development within that, which is kind of using the technology to ensure that, well, as I like to say, the reason we switched to Zoom, I felt if the politicians in Westminster can use it, if the BBC could use it, well, we could actually use it. So that's what we're doing.
Well, if idiots could use it, you're saying. You didn't say that because you wouldn't say that, but...
Yeah, it's pretty much the line that's actually there. So as we head through, obviously, the upcoming months, I mean, Sasha and Harry. By the way, is it Harry or is it Sasha who's actually sort of become a parent?
It's Sasha.
Oh, there we are. So Harry's still sort of easing back at this particular moment in time, then.
Harry is currently, he's quite interesting. He went to Manchester University and he did a degree in music. And he now produces music, his own music, and he has it online. It's not, do you know what? It's not brass band music, Alex. So, you know, obviously doesn't hit the core of my soul. But it certainly is it's music of a sphere that's out there and it's cutting edge and he thoroughly enjoys making it. So he's got all the equipment and he's got it out on Spotify and things like that. So he's kind of in a holding pattern to get out a bigger library of his work. And in the fullness of time, he wants to move back to Manchester, I think, which is where he's done his degree. And Sasha's the one, she's in Newark now. She's getting closer to you, Alex.
Well, allowing for that, clearly we need to obviously remind folk that if people actually want to access more of Sue's brass band classics, clearly we need to bring that back to Siren and certainly actually insert a segment into the midweek drive where we can actually work on that premise as well. So it's great. So it has been, to use the vernacular, awesome connecting with yourself as ever. Two final questions. They remain the same with a slight variation. Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today?
Yes, been very good. I've missed the music, Alex, because we used to sit back and kick back and have a slurp and yeah. With the music. And well, I remember distinctly talking to Patrick Moore on one of the episodes we did. I can't recall all of the.
Well, of course, I do remember
Patrick Moore, of course.
Well, there you go. I mean, hopefully, we'll have more sort of memories to actually come. So, can we look forward to connecting with you again, either via Zoom, and who knows, maybe sometime seeing you back in the studio in person. We don't know when we're going back to the studio at this particular stage, but will you be back with us via Zoom to actually join in one of our midweek drive discussion groups?
Sure, why not?